Hi there, I'm Jocelyn Seymour, teacher, former school leader, author and all-round cheerleader for teachers everywhere. Learning to read and write is a matter of social justice. Every child deserves to learn through evidence-informed practices, and every teacher deserves to be fully supported to make that happen. The Structured Literacy Podcast goes beyond the program to get to the heart of what it's really like to build a structured approach to literacy across a school. Let's go. Hello everyone, welcome to the Structured Literacy Podcast episode for this week. My name is Jocelyn and I am your host. Today we're going to talk about the concept of making sure that you have both feet on the bus. And to understand what I mean by that, we need to know what does it mean to be on the bus. This idea of the bus was something that occurred to me a few years ago. It was the idea that we're all moving in the same direction, that everybody is welcome, and that we are part of a network of primary teachers and leaders committed to advocating for the right of every child to be taught to read with evidence-informed teaching practice. We do this by continually developing our skills and knowledge through quality professional learning, dialogue with other teachers, and actively participating in our education community. It doesn't mean that we have to be an expert. It doesn't mean that we have to be perfect to be on the bus. What it does mean is that we need to embrace explicit teaching and all that comes with that. Let's explore those characteristics of explicit teaching. Firstly, we need to be committed to breaking learning down into small steps, not giving big tasks and asking kids to wade their way through. Secondly, we need to regularly ask questions and check whether students have understood what we need them to before we move on. This involves checking for understanding. You might have seen this brought to life through the use of mini whiteboards. Teacher asks a question, the students respond on the board, they chin the board, hold it up under their chin so only the teacher can see, and the teacher can, in a snapshot, figure out how many of the students have learned the thing that they were just covering. This concept of continually checking for understanding means that we are always responding to the needs of our students. We're not teaching a big block of content and then coming back 5 or 6 weeks later to have a look at where the students have learned. The third point is that we maximize teacher-led instruction and time on task. Brack Rosenshine and his colleagues did a study in 2015, and they looked at the difference between high-performing teachers and low-performing teachers when it came to time on task. Now, they found that a high-performing teacher will have double the amount of engagement time for students than a low-performing teacher, 85 minutes versus 43. Now, this adds up to 140 hours of instruction difference. Part of being committed to explicit teaching is actively working towards time on task. We need to be clear about what we want students to focus attention on, and then we need to maximize that teacher-led instruction to make sure that it happens. Tasks need to include timely error correction. For foundational skills, we really need to be teaching in a targeted way at point of need. We have to help children build models by doing things with the new learning. So Stanislas de Haan's work shows us, and others as well, that we need to help children engage in creating mental models. We have to do something with new learning. It's not enough just to be passive. Point number 8 is all skills and knowledge need to be practiced and reviewed. It's not a one and done. We have to provide consolidation opportunities. Point number 9, make sure that children have the knowledge and skills to perform the task we're asking them to. That's a cognitive load consideration, which is a part of the science of learning. Teach first and then ask students to do something with the informational skill we're teaching. How often do we ask the children, who can tell me what photosynthesis means, for example, when we're about to teach a unit on photosynthesis? So we need to stop asking questions about things we haven't taught and stop asking children to do things we haven't taught them how to do yet. Now, we often think that we are being explicit, But maybe we aren't so much. Maybe we're being more intentional. And there is a difference for me between these two. Now, when we're being intentional in our teaching, we intend for students to learn something, but maybe we're leaving it up to them to do. When we're being explicit in our approach, we are metaphorically taking the kids by the hand and we're leading them through the phases of the explicit teaching model. We're building the field for them. We're modeling and deconstructing. We're engaging in full participation joint construction, not just where the teacher and a couple of the students come up with some ideas, but where every student is actively engaged. We then provide loads of supported practice to build that consolidation until such times as children are ready to practice or use these skills or knowledge independently. That is explicit. Intentional teaching means that I have a thing that I think I want the children to learn, and I'm going to provide some experiences. Unfortunately, they may or may not lead to learning. And an example of this really can be teacher-led phonics instruction versus group rotations. In teacher-led phonics instruction or spelling instruction in the upper primary years or any other aspect of literacy, we have the teacher literally leading instruction. They are there, they're providing prompts, they're asking substantive questions, they're monitoring student progress. In intentional but not explicit instruction, what we could be doing is a mini lesson, and then the children go off into their rotations where they engage in activities sitting in a group with other kids. Now, the research is pretty clear to us that novices need fully guided instruction in order to make growth, and our students who are the most vulnerable are the most in need of this. But it's not only those students, our high flyers also benefit. This is a nobody loses approach to instruction. It is possible to be intentional without being explicit, but you can't be explicit without being intentional. You have to know what you want to teach and then lead the children through that. Now, when you are on the bus, fully on the bus with both feet, at least on the step, if not nicely under the seat in front of you, it's not just about the what we teach, but also about the how. Now, we can use decodable text and say, well, we've just spent, you know, $6,000 buying decodable text into our school and feel pretty good about ourselves. That would be a good thing to do. But if we're taking those decodable texts and we're using them to deliver traditional guided reading, and we're going to teach lots of comprehension strategies and teach inference with these decodable texts, and for most of the lesson, the children are working on their own, then we only have one foot on the bus. We don't have both. Now, if the reality of your current situation in your schools is that your school has started to invest in these resources, but practices are still more reflecting balanced literacy than explicit instruction, know that you've taken really important steps, but they're not the final point in the journey. We don't want to end things just by buying in a program or buying in a resource. Now, I'm not here to criticize. I've said in the opening, I am a champion for teachers and I really take that seriously. So I want to encourage you to acknowledge that it's difficult to change practice. It's difficult to bring a team along. Sometimes, maybe more often, people need some help to let go of the old practices, to get both feet on the bus. So how do we help them? Now, very often what we find in schools who are making the shift is that there's a lot of informal leadership that goes on. So maybe there's a really knowledgeable classroom teacher who is supporting and guiding the team around them. So when I talk support and guide and lead, it doesn't mean you have to have a formal leadership position. We have this distributed leadership often in professional life where many of us have fantastic things to contribute. And so don't think that just because you don't have a formal leadership role, that you don't have something to add. The Australian Productivity Commission released a report this week that shows our results. Not only have they not moved since 2018, but that actually they've gone backwards. And that's pretty disheartening because I know that teachers and schools are working really hard. It's been a really tough couple of years. And to hear that overall, that the efforts are not making the changes and resulting in the gains that we would want can make us feel, well, what's the point? We're working really hard and still not getting anywhere. I think that this is a really complex issue, and I don't pretend to have all the answers, but I do know that results will not move for our school, let alone all the kids, unless we've got both feet on the bus. Half measures are a nonsense. And I don't mean that if you are taking things slowly, step by step, working with your team, building capacity, adjusting things over a couple of years, that you're doing a bad job. That's not what I mean. That's actually great practice. But half measures that say we bought decodable text or we got XYZ program into the school, job done, they are not going to get the gains. That's what we used to do, and what we're still doing, and we need to adjust and stop. Because when it doesn't work, we go, well, that didn't work, so maybe now we need a new program. Actually, what we need to do is fully commit, not just commit in half measures. So many of us are looking for that one big thing that's going to move the needle, one big thing. But rather than think big thing, what if we have one big idea? Because in terms of the things we do, the moving parts, it's not about just having one big one. It's about having 100 small things we do that we do well, and we build them into practice and sustain them over time. It's the little things done well and consistently that make a huge difference. So one big idea, such as committing to explicit instruction and the evidence-informed instruction that maximizes time on task, is a really good way to view this. When we look at this and we say, let's make all of our decisions looking through this lens of how do we maximize time on task, then our decisions are actually quite a bit easier than maybe they could be. And when we do this, we need to be unapologetically committed to adopting the evidence-informed practices that are going to move the needle on student results. And I don't just mean our top few students or a few kids in the middle. I mean for everybody. When we've got two feet on the bus and committed to explicit instruction, we don't want to see any kids coasting. So you may have moderate to high achieving children, but when you look at their growth data, how much have they actually grown? Often not a lot. And so our school coasts, our NAPLAN results look okay, but are we actually making huge growth? Are we really maximizing student achievement? Well, quite possibly not. But how do we bring everyone along so that we can get two feet on the bus and really commit to explicit teaching? I think that to one extent or another, every one of us is a salesperson. If you're a parent, you're a salesperson. If you're trying to convince your leadership to purchase a resource or a book for you, you're a salesperson. We all are trying to convince somebody else to do something that they maybe either don't want to do or they don't know is important. So there are different stages to influence. The first step is awareness. The person begins to understand that there is a problem that needs to be solved. Unfortunately, sometimes our leaders have their head in the sand and deny that there's an issue, or they acknowledge there's an issue but blame someone else. Our children aren't making great progress because when they were little, their parents didn't read enough to them, that sort of thing. Well, ever that's the case, we're not getting anywhere. The very first step is awareness that there's a problem and acknowledgement that something has to change. Now, that point of awareness is not the time to hit the teacher or the person over the head with the research. We want to shed some light and share some useful pieces of information that are not overwhelming. We need something the person can connect with. So it could be a Tuesday tip. It could be one of the clips from one of our free email programs that we've run. We've done three of them now. It could be something that is low stakes and not confrontational for the person. We may be able to, at this point, share ideas that help solve the issue that's been identified. And sometimes it's around identifying the students who are struggling, because we're going to have the data to show that they're not being served. Trying to convince someone that there's a problem when the data actually looks okay is really tricky. And of course, it depends on the tools we're using. If we're using a benchmark assessment, that might be quite different from if we're using a norm referenced assessment. Once they're aware, the next step is consideration. So when people move into this stage, they've accepted that there are alternatives to the current practice, and they're thinking about options to solve the problems. Our job is to support them as they explore alternatives. These people are not ready to take action yet. The key here is building relationships and engaging in collegial discussions, avoiding the hard sell. Now, this can be really tricky because for those of us with 2 feet on the bus, the things that we're advocating for seem like the most logical and obvious things in the universe, but that person may not quite be ready yet. The third stage is analysis. They are actively weighing up alternatives. This is the point where your principal might say, okay, let's look at a few programs that are out there. And you can say, woohoo, here we go. This is the time to bring in the research. They know that there's an issue, they want alternatives, and they're actively analyzing the choices available to them. The focus here switches from if a change will be made to we are making a change and we're deciding which option will be the best one. So support them to explore alternatives, bring the research in about explicit teaching and student results, and help these people make decisions by clarifying aspects of the issue at hand. It's a funny thing when our classroom teachers are more informed about what the evidence says and what strong practice is than the decision makers. So recognize that you have a role to play. If the door is open, don't go in guns blazing, but be there to collegially and collaboratively have discussions. From there, people are ready to take action. And so once they're there and they've explored alternatives, making decisions is actually not that hard for some people. For other people, it can be a time that's really fraught with doubt and temptation to retreat. And some of this, I think, has to do with experience and personality. Some personalities are just happy to go, right, let's be decisive. Others want all the facts. They want to have done a billion years of research themselves and seen all the papers and done all the things, and they want checklists that's really specific. So your role here is to provide as much as you can in terms of information and resources, training, support, and guidance so that they can feel positive and confident about what's happening, or if they're not 100% confident, they can at least trust in the process. Finally, when action has been taken, when this new thing has been implemented, we need to provide support for ongoing development. If change is to be sustainable and ongoing, teachers do need to be supported to maintain the action through challenging times. In a previous episode, I talked about those 4 stages of Ken Blanchard's situational leadership and how we are going to hit a wall when we come across something new that we're doing. So we need to maintain relationships. We need to help them see the results that are being made so that they can sustain the action. If we don't get the right amount of support and direction when we need it, we are very likely to retreat into old habits. Our teachers are likely to close their classroom door and go back to guided reading if we can't help them maintain the positive view of what is happening. Some other things to think about is that change can be like a grieving process, and the Kubler-Ross model of change helps us understand how people may be feeling. So I'm going to share these things in the post on the Jocelyn Seymour Education website, these visuals that will help you to unpack this episode. But basically, people may go through shock and denial and frustration. And if you're one of those teachers who was taught balanced literacy and now you're on the bus, think about how shocked you might have been to discover that what you were doing was not evidence informed because you figured your university would teach you what you needed to know. You might be in a bit of denial, and then you might be frustrated and sometimes angry at what's happening. It's not uncommon to have a bit of a low mood and lack energy. And at that point, we want to spark people's motivation. So talk talk about the benefits for students, talk about equity, talk about the things that light the fire for that person, because we're all in schools to do a good job for kids. Next, let them experiment. Now, this doesn't mean they go off on their own and we say, oh, you go and figure out teaching routines. It can be that the school level leadership has made a decision about using this particular tool. And when people are taking on something new, whether that's a reading success in action or something else, that you let teachers have a bit of a play. We don't want to get really prescriptive straight away. We don't want to scare them and make everything high stakes, but we want to let them have a go and then provide them with the support to build capacity. We want to develop that capacity over time so that they're working to a high level. And only when they feel confident, only when they say, okay, I feel like I can do this thing now and I'm seeing results, will we see anything beyond surface compliance. Unless people see results and they see relevance, you will get nodding and smiling in the staff meeting and then closing the classroom door and going back and doing whatever. It doesn't end just because we brought the program or the resource into the school. We need this to be embedded. We need everyone to understand why they're doing what they're doing and be committed to it. But there is a fine line to walk here. I'm not at all suggesting that every teacher walks their own path and figures out their own way of the timing of when they are ready to take something new on. We can't do that. Leaders have to lead. They have to make decisions. But we do need to support people and understand that change is tricky. If you are sitting in that role where you are the classroom teacher advocating for change, focus on creating a data story based on what's happening in your classroom. Real data, not just look at how happy they are. That's important, but we want to have data we can make graphs with. We want to show how what we are proposing will contribute to the school's overall strategic goals. Principals will pay attention if you move the needle and make those results sing within the school. So recognize that there is nuance in these conversations, these discussions, and these actions. I don't think we can say this is a roadmap to shift practice that can be applied to every school, because there are different considerations depending on whether this is a school leader-led proposal or whether it's coming from the classroom level. Ultimately, we all want what's best for students and we all want to see student growth. We are not going to see that, however, with half measures and only having one foot on the bus. As an individual, you absolutely can influence, you absolutely can support, but ultimately our leadership has to be knowledgeable. They have to know why it matters. They have to lead. They have to make decisions so that your school can have a shared vision of that one big idea through which you will view everything that you're doing in your change process. Ideally, that's around being fully committed to implementing evidence-informed practice from the science of reading and learning so that we can maximize time on task, maximize student learning, and ultimately positively impact students as they make their way through their life. I'm not suggesting this is an easy journey to take, but the fact that you are listening to this podcast means that you are committed to all of those things and know that we at Jocelyn Seymour Education are here to support you and answer questions and guide you and be there on the days when things are tough, but also to celebrate the successes that you have. Go gently, everybody. I wish you all the best for your journey wherever you may be right now. And I look forward to bringing you another episode of the Structured Literacy Podcast next week. Bye, everyone. Thanks for joining me for today's episode. For more information about resourcing and professional learning to support you in your structured literacy journey, visit www.jocelynseymoureducation.com.